John Hinckley is found not guilty. The final nails are applied to the ERA coffin, and Israeli Prime Minister Begin gets a stormy reception on Capitol Hill. Good evening, everybody. I'm Bruce Dumont. Welcome to Inside Politics for this Thursday night. It's nice to have you with us. We will be here for the next hour, and we begin this evening our third year as host of Inside Politics. It was exactly 2 years ago that we began this program on a very hot, June night. The program began because we wanted to provide in-depth discussion of the 1980 presidential campaign and as well as the local campaigns, and we have discussed a lot of politics over the last 2 years, as we will in the future. Our telephone number is 372-0500, 372-0500. If at any point of the next hour you would like to join our discussion, talk about state, local, national, or international politics, be my guest. And joining me in the studio as our guest this evening, we have Tom Roser, president of the City Club of Chicago, vice president, corporate relations, government relations for one of the major Chicago-based corporations, who was here 2 years ago when it all began on Inside Politics. Also joining us tonight, we have Dee Clancy, who in 1976 was a Democratic candidate for Congress from the western suburban area. And as Tom Roser says, she put Henry Hyde where he is today. She is also a consultant to the South Loop Planning Board, and she is also former Special Administrative Assistant to former U.S. Senator Adlai Stevenson. Sheldon Gardner also joins us, another one of the regular members of our Inside Politics panel, former state chairman of the Independent Voters of Illinois, and also the man who ran the 1980 John Anderson campaign in the state of Illinois, and it's very nice of Shelley to go into his private stock of wine and cheese left over from the Anderson campaign, because we will indulge in that as the program unfolds this evening.
He drove here in a Volvo, too.
That's right. And rounding out our panel, another favorite of this program who has become a regular, he is the alderman of the 20th Ward of the City of Chicago. Some have described him as the only alderman with a foreign policy, Alderman Clifford Kelly. And, folks, we thank you very much for joining us tonight. 372-0500, the phone number again. Whatever you want to talk about in the political world, do give us a call. 372-0500. Let's begin with the story that's been with us for a long, long time. We have discussed it on this program numerous times over the last 2 years, and I mentioned it in the headlines this evening, the ERA. The final nails are being applied. Dee Clancy, as you look at what happened over the last 2 years and as you weigh what Ellie Smeal of NOW, the national chairman of NOW, said in Washington today, she said that this war may be over, but the battle will continue. If you had to do it all over again, what changes would you make in the way that ERA was handled in the state of Illinois?
Well, I think I'd probably buy off the legislature in the first week instead of trying to wait to the end and bungling. I say that facetiously. I don't mean that. I think that...
That's what Wanda Brandstetter said.
Is the U.S. attorney
as I said, it's a joke, folks. A little anniversary joke here. I think that what I'd probably do differently is change the composition of the legislature, and I hope that's what the women and the enlightened men of Illinois will do between now and the time that ratification comes up for a vote again. I don't mean before June 30th. I mean when it's introduced into the Congress again and we start the whole process over. I get a little annoyed with our legislators who are sworn to uphold the Illinois Constitution, which contains an article in the Bill of Rights, Section 18, which is almost verbatim the proposed 27th Amendment. And I also get annoyed with some of our legislators who suggest that while they are for equal rights, they're opposed to the amendment. United States Representative Barbara Mikulski suggested that that was sort of like Abraham Lincoln saying to Sojourner Truth, "Well, Sojourner, I'm all for the emancipation, but not the proclamation. Let's just do it plantation by plantation." And I think we'll probably get back to work on the plantations.
Tom Roser, your appraisal of the way that ERA has been orchestrated over the last 2 years.
Well, I think that the guy that's a real loser, of course, is Jim Thompson. I can't imagine anybody coming down on the wrong side between the chairs of two very militant groups, Phyllis Schlafly's group and the group headed by Ellie Schmeel. And Jim did it. He's got about 1.5 people who are for him right now in the entire state. I'll tell you, he has antagonized more people in this thing by picking for the candidate for lieutenant governor the one person who really could wound him mortally, and in fact has. I think he's like a Moby Dick. He may, in fact, be the other side of the Moby Dick. In fact, I think Cap'n Ahab is going to get him, because Jim Thompson is, without a doubt, has proved to all of us that he is very innocent of any political guile. He is absolutely near retarded in terms of political intelligence.
The selection of George Ryan as his running mate after strongly endorsing him in a three-way Republican primary has been discussed in this program a number of times during this past year, but no one has ever been able to answer the question, what was it about the relationship between Thompson and Ryan that forced him to choose George Ryan? Shelley, do you know anything
about that? The story we always get is that Ryan really wanted to be Secretary of State, and they felt he could create too many problems there. By the way, before we leave the subject, there's another big loser that's going to come out in the ARA thing, and that's Daley. Because if you take a look at where the Democrats were that dumped the ERA bill and went the wrong way, it was Daley. Now, Jane Byrne came out smelling like a rose because she really worked hard, she put herself in a position, and she really looks good. But Daley quietly played as if he was for the thing, and yet his constituency and his power base was probably the worst Democratic power base in Cook County in voting the wrong way.
I think there's only a short amount of time when people like Daley and Adlai Stevens will run into trouble because they don't understand the ideological makeup of our electorate right now. You either come down hot or you don't come down at all. In other words, you come... Isn't that right, Clifford?
I agree. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, that's why Thompson's kind of a wimp in the sense... I think Stevenson is too, so that makes it equal.
Yeah.
But Thompson's kind of a wimp in the sense that he hasn't got guts to be for anything.
That's
so he got the worst of both worlds. Stevenson is great because nobody expects anything out of him.
Cliff Kelly. Shelley,
he epitomizes that old saying, the politician, when asked a controversial question, says, some of my friends are for it, some are against it, and I'm with my friends. And that's what Thompson is constantly trying to do, and of course is finally catching up with him.
But I think that Thompson's choice of Ryan as his lieutenant gubernatorial candidate is going to drive lots of voters into the arms of Adlai Stevenson and Grace Mary Stern, including, for example, some of the persons in the labor movement who are lukewarm toward Adlai at this point, but who are scared to death that Jim Thompson's going to run off to some kind of position in the federal government on his stepping stone to the presidency, and we are going to have the potential of having Ryan as the governor of the state?
Is there any way for Governor Thompson to rebound from where he is right now? Again, I think we have a consensus here at the table that Governor Thompson is in serious political trouble. A lot of that trouble can be tied to his stand on ERA and his relationship with George Ryan. Is there any way he can get out from under that rock?
Well, what I was saying, Bruce, is in trying to please both sides by strongly supporting his running mate, that pleased the anti-ERA side. And, of course, he went out, and particularly at the last minute, really tried to strong-arm some of the Republican legislators to support it. There are some months left. I don't know what may happen between now and then, but I can't see him personally. I don't think he'll regroup by November. I think he's in big trouble.
Why didn't the forces try to do something in the Senate, perhaps probably to put more pressure on the House?
Because I think in both instances, and I think that will, as a matter of fact, happen this week, that they'll try and get a vote in the Senate. The point is, in both houses, there is this incredible, insurmountable, extraordinary majority requirement. And I think while that exists, it is simply impossible in either house to get an affirmative vote for
just
that occasion.
And that's only by rule. And they made a mistake when
that
first happened. You do not need 3/5 to amend the federal constitution. I was a CONCON delegate, and we discussed that. The extraordinary majority comes in, but you have to have 3/4 of the states to do it. But the state itself can become a part of that ratification by a simple majority.
That's right, and they have a court decision to that effect,
exactly,
and an
right.
attorney general's opinion. But you also have a Speaker of the House
who's just preventing it. But tonight in the Senate, I heard on the way over here that the Senate had a vote to change the rules, and they fell one vote short, and it was not explained yet, but Phil Rock did not vote at all.
And if
he had voted,
the Democratic Party
29 votes, and the president of the Senate, who is supposedly pro-ERA, did not vote.
Let's see if maybe before we go off the air, maybe we could have somebody in our news department check, see if they can reach Springfield and find out, maybe get a clarification from Phil Rock's office as to why he did not. Sheldon Gardner?
I was just saying the Democratic Party has something for everybody. The interesting thing is, while Thompson and the Republicans are probably more at fault, but the Democrats have been in collusion with the same kind of laydown, and I don't hear people like D. Clancy talking about the activities of the Democrats in the Senate. It really gets good because the Democrats are very, very good at covering their reaction. And the Republicans aren't smart enough to cover their reactionaries.
Can you be more specific?
Sure. I mean, you've got a lot of Democrats. You take a look and you go down the list. You only needed a few more. And take a look at the number of Democrats who are under stronger patronage control than Thompson has over his people. And nobody's saying anything about the fact that these people weren't squeezed or pushed either.
Can you be specific? Name names?
Well, there were three or four or five Southwest Siders from the very conservative turf there who were all on the wrong side. There weren't that many Chicago Democrats on the wrong side. Interestingly enough, there weren't that many Chicago Republicans on the wrong side.
Those people are representing their constituencies, though, Sheldon. Yeah, you know, a very unfortunate thing happened some years ago. I had introduced an ordinance or a resolution in the city council memorializing the legislature to vote for ERA. It passed, but not by the type of majority that it should have. When Esther Saperstein left the Senate and came to the city council, she was going to do the same thing, and I suggested at that time we not do it. She says, well, you're anti-ERA, and people said, no, Cliff's not anti-ERA, he's very much for it. But what happened, and she did it anyway, what happened was a strange sequence of events. At that time, Don Swinarski had gone to jail. His seat was filled by Leroy Lemke, and he was appointed to the executive committee of the Senate. Well, Leroy Lemke had voted in favor of ERA in the House. We had the vote on the council floor. Lemke looked at the fact that all of the aldermen that were in his senatorial district voted against it, and he changed his vote. And it came out as a do not pass from the executive committee, and if he had voted as he promised, it would have come out as a do pass recommendation.
I'm
saying that those people over there... Yeah.
Tom Rozier.
Summing it up, what we're talking about this is sort of an ideological governance. You either come down for or you come down mm-hmm. against. What Mr. Thompson has done and what Mr. Daley does, and I think probably what Mr. Stevenson does, is to come on between the chairs and say, well, I'm sort of halfway. You don't do that. You didn't do it for civil rights. You don't do it for equal rights. You don't do it on all the other very great issues, including, I suppose, nuclear freeze. You come out one way or the other.
What issue has Adlai Stevenson wavered on?
I think Adlai Stevenson has wavered on all kinds of things because he's a very... Well, for example, a question was asked before the City Club of Chicago that he appeared on where a black gentleman stood up and said, how many blacks did you have in your office? The answer is none.
That's not true, Tim.
Well, the answer was that he gave was that I don't know. The answer this gentleman said, who was from Evanston, was that there was none. The answer that somebody else said was that there may have been out of a total of 28 or 29, possibly 30, maybe two.
Four.
Or what?
Or four. There were four when I was on the staff.
Then you should be running for the United States Senate, but this or for the governorship. This guy doesn't come on like that and say, okay, there was none and that's why there's none, or there were 8 or 20 or whatever. You don't now, in this modern ideological age, say, I don't know. And I think, although he may become governor, I do think that Adlai has got a problem, and I think Richie has a problem. Do you agree, Clifford? I don't know whether...
Well, certainly... Stevenson lacks charisma. There's no doubt about that, and it's very.
But you know the hard answer. You give the hard.
Yeah. Well, sure. I don't know whether. Well, yeah. Daley may have the same problem too. But hopefully, based on some of the things that I know he attempts to do or is attempting to do, he may make some changes.
Yeah.
D. Clancy, we'll give you the final word on this, and then I want to ask another question.
I'm just suggesting that I do not see charisma as being the major prerequisite for some kind of reasonable governance. I think that
how about electability?
I think that it helps, but I would personally prefer some kind of solid, intellectual, thoughtful person to be running for public office rather than someone who was a hot number on television.
Tom says, though, everyone wants to be a statesman, but you have to get elected first.
And Adlai Stevenson has done that, folks, on several occasions since 1964.
And thank goodness for his name, quite frankly.
We've got the Battle of the Undefeateds going.
But I think if you follow that through, the guy who's going to get the Democratic nomination, and maybe the presidency, but at least the Democratic nomination, has got to be Teddy.
That's correct.
Because Teddy has been there. And Chappaquiddick recedes. Would you not agree?
No, I don't agree.
I think Teddy's going to get the nomination and is going to be the nominee. Cliff Kelly shakes his head.
I agree with you.
I agree.
Who do you think is going to get the nomination?
I don't know. I'm sorry to say that.
John Glenn is sort of bland out, right?
If they could package the Democratic candidate like they did in the old days, some smart packaging would make Glenn a Democratic Eisenhower and make him saleable. But the fact is that the Democratic Party, as is controlled in its primary, isn't controllable. And it will be Teddy's group because Teddy will sell it.
Teddy's got to do is lose 20 pounds.
That's right. I want to get your... Yeah.
He's a good person to give advice.
He's advising the Ted Kennedy campaign now. I want to get your reaction since we're talking about... We've switched from the gubernatorial race to the National Democratic challenge for the presidency. The latest Gallup poll showed that 45% of registered Democrats want Kennedy in 1984 compared to a paltry 12%. For runner-up, former Vice President Walter Mondale. Does it surprise anybody at this table that Walter Mondale is only able to muster 12%? Dee Clancy?
No, it doesn't surprise me because I think that most people at this point still associate him with the last administration, which I think was not the most shining one in recent memory. Although my husband said recently that in seeing Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford and I forget who the third person was for one of the state funerals recently with Jimmy Carter, that Jimmy Carter took on the appearance of a giant at that time. So that I think everything's relative.
Good luck to your husband.
I also think that we're way far away from the 1982 presidential campaign.
They don't elect the lieutenant commander of the Titanic to run the ship.
And we've done that on several occasions.
We may try to resurrect Mondale. A, Mondale has never been much of a campaigner. Most of his stuff he's appointed or put into. B, there is no way that Mondale can repudiate Carter. And really, Tom is so right that that Teddy has got
Many
it.
Many people will agree with that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Teddy has got it by the fact that nobody else is really running, almost like McGovern. And Teddy is going to be a disaster. Teddy is going to go so far down in the general election. When the stories start going and all the middle-class Jewish and Catholic and other and Protestant matron ladies are resurrected with the Chappaquiddick story, which is going to come out in all the magazines at the right time, he's going to be a real disaster.
You know, I disagree. I think that, if anything, what the 1980 campaign has done, or did, I think it put Chappaquiddick aside insofar as the tremendous media coverage. I think if, in 1984, I think if the media came back, I don't think they would cover it to the extent that they did in 1980.
Mudd was the exorcist.
Right.
He said, devil, get out of there, and everything, and Teddy...
I don't think the media can do the job on Chappaquiddick that they did in 1980. It may be there. It may be a latent issue to the matrons and the matinee ladies, but I don't think the media is going to hit them over the head with it.
Well,
like
let's
they
assume
did
it's going to be Ronnie Reagan.
Mayor Byrne will be looking for work then, and she could hire herself out as a consultant to the Republican nominee.
Are you sure?
For a smear
she wants to bring the 1984
campaign
here.
I think she'll do very well.
I think Byrne will be reelected. I think that she...
Wait a minute. Flag the tape. This is a memorable moment. This is going to be a three-volume record set in about 2 years. Memorable moments in the history of inside politics. Tom Roser had said many of them, and he just said one, and we want to back it up and say it again.
I think Mayor Byrne is going to be reelected. She's going to get the Democratic nomination, and I think she's going to go on, and I think people are going to reelect her.
It's 23 minutes after 7 o'clock.
And you're going to play this
on
forever.
June 24th, 1980.
This guy's going to laugh.
You're right, Tom. You're right.
He's going to have a cassette of this. He's going to invite me over to his house.
I don't see that happening, particularly. Well, the only way she could win, as I see it, is if enough candidates run to split the vote, and with Daley considering running as an independent, that would even mitigate that advantage to her.
And do you think there are going to... How many candidates do you think that there are going to be, if you were going to predict right now?
It's hard to say, Dee, because I'm sure if they're not enough, the mayor will put some in herself.
She's smarter than Blandick.
Yes, Blandick was supposed to have done that, and he didn't. If he had, he'd be the mayor today. Yeah.
On the subject of possible mayoral candidacies, I should take a moment right now to promote the show for next Thursday night. Our special guest will be Congressman Harold Washington, who just may be one of those candidates in a crowded field in 1983. Our phone number, 372-0500. We've got lots of callers on the line, so let's turn them loose and invite them to our party. Good evening, Matt. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, Bruce. I've got two Watergates and a Clifford Kelly.
Go ahead. I'll trade you two Bobby Bonds and a...
This is
and a
quote.
Tom Pachorek. Go ahead.
This is a quote from the Frost interview with Richard Nixon that was on PBS last week. My motive was pure political containment, and political containment is not a corrupt motive. If so, for example, President Truman would have been impeached. What was he referring to?
Tom Roser?
Well, I don't know what he was referring to.
The specific question I'm asking is,
am I the guy that's supposed to be the backup man for Nixon after
no,
he bombs off?
No, what?
Are you referring? You're referring to what his
you
allusion
to? Jane Byrne's going
to
win, I guess. He figures.
He says there's always one goof on every panel, right?
Here.
What did
ask the nuts to Tom? All right, go ahead, Tom.
Make them jelly beans.
We're not asking you to defend Richard Nixon. We're asking you to defend what he said about Harry Truman.
What did Harry Truman do that made Richard Nixon say that? Does anybody know?
I don't know what. Shelley and
I'm referring to the gentleman on the panel.
I got another Watergate question for you, Tom. You said a while ago that of the Nixon administration, with that crowd, if it wouldn't have been Watergate, it would have been something else.
Yeah, it would have been.
Could you illustrate with a specific example what some conduct?
Yes, sir.
That led you to that conclusion.
Yes, sir. It was in my department. It was in Commerce. And when I sat down with Maurice Stans, when he was rolling the steel ball bearings a la Captain Quig, and he was saying, you know, Roser, this is now 1969, before the fall, Stans was saying, what we got to do is buy and rent these blacks the way the Democrats do. And you've got the entire division that'll do it with black capitalism, Roser, and you're going to have a great big budget. And you're going to do all this kind of stuff. And I said, pardon me, sir, you've got me wrong. I'm a conservative. You know, we're not going to buy and rent anybody. I believe in the free market, where it stands then. Adjourned the meeting very quickly and went out, and I suppose threw up, because he did not want to have free market. Free market's only for the rich, as far as Maury was concerned. He didn't want to have free market for the blacks. He wanted to have subsidies for the blacks, and he wanted to build the kind of corrupt thing that would cause blacks to go into the system and get subsidies. And what I resented and what I then was canned for was a kind of subsidy program which would move into black and minority community organizations and give them a lot of federal money. And I didn't want to do it. That would have been Watergate.
Okay. Another memorable moment in the history of this program over the last couple of years, it happened about 2 or 3 months ago, and you referred to it, Cliff Kelly, and you referred to Mayor Byrne's BBC campaign by a black clergyman.
Mm-hmm.
About 6 weeks later, there was a big newspaper story about that allegation. How is that campaign going on, and can you summarize it in about 30 seconds?
You read it, Cliff Kelly?
Yeah, I went into the wrong business. That's why she never gave me anything but bad press. I think to some degree, Bruce, it's toned down a bit. Probably what has happened is that the ministers have been told, don't talk about it too much. But there were a number of black ministers, as you know, who came out against that, and even some wrote her letters saying, don't come into my place of worship and interrupt to come up to give me $5,000. And it was just a very bad thing. And those few ministers did do that.
No.
those few ministers who have done that have been totally ostracized by the black community.
All right, let's go back to calls. Good evening, Lillian. Thank you for calling.
Yes. I am hoping that my fellow Democrats won't be victims of the Republicans picking their candidate for them. It's the Republicans' wishful thinking that, quote, Teddy, unquote, will be nominated by the Democrats and will just as easily lose to Ronnie with the help of Johnny Anderson. Of all the Democrats that I know as a local worker who switched in the primary to vote for Anderson, they did it to in the hope of saving the country from Ronald Reagan. They didn't do it because they were Anderson fans.
Ma'am,
yes.
As the story state chairman for John Anderson, I'll say this, baloney. There were a lot of people who couldn't stomach Jimmy Carter, and the best thing that Ronald Reagan had going was Jimmy Carter was probably the worst president this country's ever had.
And a lot of those people are now realizing that what they got was far worse, and that under Carter, the people in Argentina and the people in Lebanon were not killing themselves, were not... Carter never fought.
Yeah, but let me just ask a follow-up. I mean, are you blaming what happened in the Falklands on Ronald Reagan?
On his poor choice of Gene Kirkpatrick. Yes, I think the whole Reagan administration.
How can you blame that on Gene Kirkpatrick? I mean, it was the Iron Lady in Great Britain that sent the troops in.
Oh, no, no. The Iron Lady did not invade Argentina. Kirkpatrick said, "You nice anti..."
No, she sent the troops in, though, after Argentina invaded the Falklands.
Right. And so would we, if Argentina said Hawaii is closer to Argentina than it is to U.S. and therefore it belongs to us. We'd have our troops right there on Hawaii. Or in Alaska, if Russia said Alaska is closer to us, there used to be Russians here.
Lillian, let me ask you a question, because you're obviously a Democrat. Who do you want in 1984 if you don't want Teddy?
I'd love Teddy for vice president. I think if he had any strength of character, and this is his chance to prove it, he would name a panel of other Democrats that he would be willing to run for, and it would be less likely to have a Democratic president assassinated with Teddy Kennedy as vice president. Kennedy, I think, owes the Democratic Party a decent backing out. I would have voted for him, and I'll still vote for him if he is the thing. I won't do what he did to Carter.
Okay, we thank you very much for your call, I think. Good evening, John. You're on the air.
Yes. All I'm going to say is this. After the Stockman shadiness that turned out, and the Allen shadiness that turned out, and the Hague shadiness that eventually turned out, and the Donovan shadiness that turned out, that Reagan surrounded himself with, the Chappaquiddick thing is not going to have the power, is not going to be the pressure on Ted Kennedy that it was the last election.
I agree. Does anybody disagree with what I said before?
I disagree.
Oh, you disagree.
I disagree, too.
That's
after
all this shadiness, after this guy surrounded himself with all these shady people, people are not going to think the same way they thought about Chappaquiddick.
It isn't the crookedness, it's the morality.
Yeah,
whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, I'm just talking syllogistically.
Okay, John, let's let Dee Clancy, because she disagrees with you and with what I said a few moments ago, that I didn't think Chappaquiddick was going to be a big deal in 84.
I think it's going to be a big deal because it's a good media story, and we've been talking earlier in the evening about how people have to be charismatic and be good media types and that sort of thing. And Chappaquiddick, is simply too delicious a story for the media to let go of. But I think
they've done the story.
I know it, but that was 4 years ago. Of course, they've done it ever since it happened. But the point is, it is not going to go away.
No, I disagree with that.
All right, but at any rate, the point I wish to make from that is that I think how people translate that into whether a person is a fit presidential candidate or not does not have to do with, although I think that Teddy Kennedy's politics also his particular point of view enters in here, that the quantum leap that people make from Chappaquiddick is in terms of what kind of response a person has in a tense situation, what a person's moral response is.
I don't agree. I think that the media had their chance with Teddy. They beat him up around the head and shoulders. It's over now. I think Teddy is going to be a very good candidate. I think he could very likely get in, and I think that he'd be the best candidate that I would pick, and I'm not even saying as a Republican. I'd say objectively I'd pick Teddy because I think ideologically he stands for more people. There are going to be people concerned about the economy. I think Teddy's going to be the better candidate.
I think if any morality issue is going to come up, I don't think it's going to be Chappaquiddick. I think it'll be the divorce because that has not been covered by the media.
All right, but one other point I want to make, and that is I think it does not matter, and I say this lightly, who the Democratic candidate is. I think what Ronald Reagan is going to be faced with is what Jimmy Carter is going to be faced with, and that is the Ronald Reagan question. What is the condition of your life at this point? Is it any better? And I think it is going to be so awful that in some ways it does not matter who the Democratic candidate is. I think that Ronald Reagan is going to go down to vainglorious defeat. Happily, from my point of view.
On that note, let me reintroduce everyone in case you've just joined us. You just heard Dee Clancy speak. She, in 1976, was a Democratic candidate for Congress from the 6th Congressional District. She is now a consultant to the South Loop Planning Board, former special assistant to U.S. Senator Adlai Stevenson. Tom Roser joins us, president of the City Club of Chicago, a regular member of the panel. Cliff Kelly, alderman of the 20th Ward, also joins us, as well as Sheldon Gardner, former state chairman of the Independent Voters of Illinois and the former state chairman of the John Anderson campaign in 1980. Our telephone number is 3720500. If you have questions or comments, we've got about the guests who have been kind enough to show up here on a regular basis, and four of those regular participants have stopped in here this evening, and we really appreciate their being with us, not only tonight, but over the last 2 years. And we hope that you will be with us for many, many more years to come, not only here in the studio, but also those listening out in Radio Land. Let's move on to another subject. The big story of this past week was the acquittal of John Hinckley. And although it's a little far afield of what we generally discuss in inside politics, it does have political overtones to it. Let's go right around the table and get a reaction. Cliff Kelly?
Well, I'm one of those who certainly criticize the decision. I think it's an unfortunate thing. You should have a verdict of insanity fine, but also guilty.
Yeah.
I think that's so obvious.
Cliff, I think what you're talking about, which is so important, is that guilty should not be a defense but a factor in mitigation as to how the person's treated.
That's right. Interesting
thing is, in most situations comparable to this, we've never seen a situation where a presidential assassin was really treated by the virtue of the insanity defense. Generally speaking, the jury has a little more good judgment than the law and realize the nature of the crime and how it ought to be treated. Over here, there was so much testimony coming, and I think the jury became confused.
Tom Roser?
I agree with Cliff and with Shelley.
Dee Clancy?
I think that there are sort of two points of view in terms of the reaction to the Hinckley verdict, and one is sort of a vindictive point of view that people sort of want to get Hinckley. That is not my point of view. I am not sure that I believe in the guilty but insane verdict, simply because that verdict does not ensure any kind of treatment for the allegedly insane person. And I'm very much ambivalent in terms of that decision. The problem,
Dee, is, for instance, here in Illinois, we have people who have gone to mental institutions, who have committed all sorts of violent crimes. They walk right out of the institution anytime they want, commit another crime, and just continue to perpetuate this sort of violence on the public. One of the major reasons for government to exist is the protection of its citizens, and we're not doing it. I remember in China, and I'm not suggesting this, but we're going from one extreme to the other. We are on one end of the spectrum. I was in China in 77, and I remember we were in northern China and heard that in Peking, an American had been stabbed by a Chinese citizen, which in itself was odd. The victim was in the hospital for 4 hours, which shows it was a superficial wound. 2 days later, the Chinese government declared the assailant to be insane, and they shot him. I'm not saying we should do that, but we certainly should not allow people to just walk around in the street. If Hinckley is... how many psychiatrists in that trial said that he wasn't insane? So if he goes to an institution and a psychiatrist says he's cured, he's back on the street again.
Well, I think one point that Cupp made in his column today was that if this trial has proven anything, it's an indictment of the psychiatric profession.
That's right.
Because you
That's
can
exactly
get them right. to say anything that you damn
but
well
people
want.
People who are sane don't do these kind of things.
Exactly.
Dee, where you're so wrong is, if you want to take a look at every man, I'm sure Gacy wasn't normal, but you got a jury with some sense. And what are they saying? They're saying, we can't let this guy back out. And that's why the jury, sometimes with common sense, does a better job. No mass murderer or rapist. These people aren't normal. And if you think people are going to get good treatment in mental institutions, boy, you haven't followed the state of this country.
Well, and my hope is that the one thing that will come out of this verdict is that there will be some spotlight on those very institutions, and those institutions should be as responsible as the penal system, and we'll save that for
another.
You're
not a Democrat, you're a utopian socialist.
The penal institution doesn't hold up either. The recidivism rate shows that. We don't cure anyone, you know, of criminal intent. But, of course, then again, that costs money.
In April of last year, in our first program talking about the assassination attempt on President Reagan's life in Washington, we talked about the political ramifications of that assassination. And, Tom, you were, I think, perceptive in suggesting that those that thought the assassination and the feeling towards the president was going to be short-lived, I think you were correct that it lasted a lot longer.
Well, Ciccone,
certainly it extended the honeymoon. Dick Ciccone disagreed with you on that point. My question to you is there political gain by the president as a result of the Hinckley verdict?
No doubt. No doubt. I think that people feel that, you see, an attempt to assassinate a president is an attempt to change the conduct of the country. What happened in this country was is that I am confident, although I'm a conservative Republican, I'm confident that Bobby Kennedy would have become the next president of the United States in the tumult and the ferment that happened in 1968. The person that that killed Bobby changed the whole direction of the country. We ended up with Richard Nixon. And I think that this is more than shooting Cliff Kelly or Tom Roser or Shelley or Dee or anybody else. You change then the choices that people make, and that is an enormously, enormously tragic effect. And I think that what ought to happen is that there ought to be mandatory death penalties for people who kill presidential candidates or presidents, because then people like you and I and all the powerless cannot then make our choices. I'm convinced that Bobby would have been the president.
I think you're so right in one sense. I'm not so sure about mandatory death penalty, but follow it through. If this decision came out that Dee is promoting in a sense, I think Saran is nuts. I think the guy is so loony, and when you listen to him and his threats and everything, suppose that you were able to pitch a jury, and this man were out in the street. This man is crazy. This man is dangerous.
To go a little farther, Shelley, and you mentioned that, I agree with Tom. I agree with what you're saying, too, but you mentioned the mandatory death penalty. I think the man is crazy, too. And I think he'll be there, you know, like Speck. He should never get out. But when you think of the fact that it costs over $20,000 a year to incarcerate someone like that, and the Cook County Department of Public Aid says that a family of four should be able to live on less than $5,000 a year, and these are people who haven't even shown antisocial propensities and could possibly be helped if they had the money, I think it's a waste.
Do you agree with the death penalty?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
See, Cliff, and I know Cliff sort of agrees with this. Look at the domestic tranquility which would have occurred had Martin Luther King been allowed to live.
Right.
Now, one guy decided that Martin Luther King would die. Now, who bought him, who rented him, who set him up in that horrible little thing where Dr. King was killed, then destroyed our domestic tranquility, yours and mine. And I think those people then have to pay the... I think the state, I think government should protect itself against people.
Except that has never been, in statistically, the death penalty has not prevented other people from killing other people. And if we're talking especially about persons who are, quote, insane, unquote, those persons are not going to be deterred by the fact that another person's life has been taken.
Deterrence is not the only reason. The one I was just stating has nothing to do with deterrence. There are no statistics to show either that it doesn't deter. You know, you have a lighthouse.
It will deter that one person.
Exactly. That's right. And you have a lighthouse to steer ships clear. You don't know how many ships is saved, but you don't tear the lighthouse down.
You only had one.
You can't say that it doesn't deter people.
What about the issue that Cliff just brought up of pure economics? Is the investment of $20,000 to keep a would-be assassin alive, is that a better investment of tax dollars than perhaps helping a retarded child gain and develop?
We keep lots of people alive at a cost that is perhaps inordinate, but I think that as a civilized people, that we do that. I think there is a difference between being barbarian and being a civilized.
Well, there are other civilized countries, Dee, that certainly have the death penalty.
Okay. I understand that. I don't agree with them either.
Let's move on. 3720.
And I should say a lower crime rate.
If you have questions or comments, we have touched on a political issue this evening, zeroing in on exactly what should happen to John Hinckley, and there's been a proposal made by Tom Roser and seconded by Cliff Kelly that perhaps that an attack on the President of the United States should be a capital offense. David, good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. I have an idea about the guilty but insane charge, but while you were talking about the capital offense thing, something else came to mind. One reason I would disagree with that was I remember something that happened in the final waning days of Watergate. Nixon was going to, I believe it was, New Orleans, and there was a big hoorah about a supposed assassination threat made on him by some young guy who was a member of the SDS or something. And it was later revealed that the whole thing was a hoax. It was a last desperate attempt of Nixon to get public support. I remember this was on the news. It's not something that I think happened. It isn't remembered too often. But I'm saying the only danger with that type of thing could be that somebody could be set up for that. And I think that's enough of a danger. When you talk about mandatory death sentence, you're talking about, you know, it's the same thing as saying all rapists should be castrated. There's a slight chance that in 40 years they're going to take a blood test that didn't exist 40 years ago and the guy's going to be exonerated. That's happened, you know. And I think that we have to make sure that if you're really going to talk about a mandatory death sentence, there has to be no chance that somebody wasn't set up for some crazy political reason. But my point was that...
Let me just say that I don't think we have to go as far back as Nixon. There are those that would suggest that the tremendous amount of worldwide publicity suggesting that there was a Libyan hit team in the United States to knock off President Reagan and leaders of the United States was, was nothing but a smokescreen to take the heat off the economy.
And it could be very easy to pick up some guy in America of Libyan descent and to frame him. But my point was that I have an idea that there could be a guilty but insane scenario that runs like this. Yes, John Hinckley is guilty. He planned it out. He was insane in the same way that Edgar Allan Poe is insane in some of his stories where he says, you know, look how craftily I planned this thing out. You know, he shows that he's sane by going step by step. I think it's the Telltale Heart. He's obviously mad, even though he's capable of planning something out step by step. Okay, he's guilty, but insane. He's insane because his vision was so mad, his whole reality was so warped, but he's guilty because he plans it out. He knew he was committing a crime, he knew he was doing wrong. So he's sentenced for life, no ifs, ands, or buts, no parole, to an institution. He doesn't deserve to go to jail, probably, because he's not, because his madness, you know, gives him that much. But he has to be off the streets, so put him in an institution for his life.
Okay.
He's off the streets, he's not going through the punishment that somebody who knows he is doing wrong does, but he's off the streets.
Okay, we thank you very much for your telephone call, 3720500. Another story that broke today dealing with the city of Chicago and brought up that familiar name, Charlie Swible. Everybody's favorite target in the city of Chicago, and that was a report released by the City Club of Chicago, political meddling in the Chicago Public Library at all levels, from the hiring of clerks to senior officials, has been blatant during the administration of Mayor Jane Byrne, that according to a report that was released earlier this week by the City Club of Chicago. We have the president of that club with us this evening. He is Tom Roser. First of all, Tom, how come this big, long story and your name wasn't mentioned? How did that happen?
Well, there was obviously a false... Something happened somewhere.
I think that it was academic study, which I didn't participate in, and I think that the study was pretty dispassionate. I think that you'll find that the late Mayor Daley politicized the library board, and I think politicization occurred then. It occurred, obviously, before that, and I think the mayor has used that as a rationale for saying that, look, this happened before. I think that's true. I think that Shelley knows, IVI chairman who opposed a lot of the things Daley did, and even before that, I think
everything in Chicago is political.
Yeah,
yes, but to follow up and to somewhat contradict that, though, Tom, according to the report, quote, while Mayor Richard J. Daley was in office, there was virtually no interference with the personnel standards at the professional level, end of quote.
Well, that's now, what... You know, I stand by the report, and it's a committee that I didn't serve on, and I am proud of those people that worked on it. I think that, however, that...
But you just said that Daley politicized it, and the report says
Daley did. Oh, no, yes, he did, according to the report of the City Club, that that politicization did occur. Green was named, who was a relative, I guess, of the late Mayor Daley. And
but that
I
was Blandick did that.
Blandick named a relative of the late Mayor Daley. I think that I'm not against patronage so far as patronage is concerned. If people are able to deliver, if my brother, if I'm a mayor of Chicago, and my brother happens to be a PhD, and if he does it, I'm for it. I think that person can do it. I have no problem with that. I do have a problem with people who say, okay, let's take all politicization out of the library, and then let's have the average bureaucratic people run it. I don't think that's necessarily so good either.
We're less than a week from July 1st. That's when Charlie Swible is supposed to be out, or conceivably the federal funds from HUD may be withheld again. Charlie Swible said earlier this week that he doesn't want to do anything that's going to cause harm and concern and discomfort to those in CHA. I would suggest that he visit somebody who lives in CHA. I think there would be quite a bit of discomfort already. How long is he going to last? Is he going to go past the deadline, and are we going to see round two of Jane Byrne and Charlie Swible versus Sam Pierce and HUD? Cliff Kelly?
Bruce, he did say those things, but I also heard where he said that he wasn't going to resign based on any illegal threat of withholding funds. So I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do. I think I agree with what you just said. He should go to some of these places. Today there was a policeman shot at Cabrini Green, and on television tonight, the residents of the housing area said that there were all sorts of illegal searches. If you were in the building, you couldn't get out. If you were out, you couldn't get in. They went into apartments where there were no adults and abused the children, and anywhere where there was a gun or any kind of weapon, they arrested everyone there, notwithstanding whether it was registered or not. And there was a program the other day where the residents of that area were saying that it's a police state. And they said it used to be, it was better when it was run by the gangs, because at least then you could call the police. But now with the police abusing you, there really isn't anyone to call. So there's all kinds of problems that exist there. It has not been helped at all, and whether Mr. Zweibel is the cause of it, I don't know. To the library board, to the surprise of many of my colleagues, when Mr. Zweibel was recommended by the mayor, I stood up and made a speech in his favor, because I said that Mr. Zweibel is a doer. True enough, some people have a problem with who he does it to, but he wants a library, and I wanted a new library, and I said, you know, Mr. Zweibel reminds me of a guy who ran for mayor in Zanesville, Ohio, some years ago, and his campaign slogan was something for everybody, and little for me, too. Now, true enough, he may build a new library, but he may end up owning the land it is built on, but the point was that I wanted a new library. I do not in any way suggest that that report that was done by the City Club is not valid, because I know enough about what goes on over there to know that he is there to do exactly what he's doing.
Well, let me say, if I may, I think patronage stinks, because it's the most reactionary force that would make Reagan look like a flaming liberal is the Democratic Party in Cook County and the city of Chicago, because they steal and they loot and they rob and they rape to reward their own. Charlie Zweibel's there for only one reason. He gets enough money into the coffers of the powers that be. The poor people in this city have been ripped off for everything. We've got all kinds of people who don't do any work, who don't perform, because they can show you their card for what they do in their precinct. And you talk about a reactionary, rotten state. Take a look at the patronage system, even with the effect that the Shackman system has tried to have on it.
But in answer to Bruce's question, I would predict that Charlie Zweibel will resign, because his statement recently, a night or two ago, has been the first statement that he has made that perhaps he will, and I see that as a harbinger of the fact that he will, as a matter of fact.
So they'll put another patsy in there. It'll be a fundraiser. They'll milk the Chicago Housing Authority. They'll milk the Chicago Park District. They'll milk the Chicago Library System. They'll milk everything.
Don't forget the school board.
And the school board. Okay?
Tom,
Cliff,
please.
You know what I'm talking about, sir. You know who they're milking most of all.
Yeah. Charlie, well, Charlie, how do you feel, though? I mean, how do you really feel about Charlie Zweibel?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you pulled your punch a little bit. Let's go to the calls. We've got a few minutes left.
He's so ambiguous.
I hate these people that get on these talk shows and they pussyfoot
around.
They walk down the center line. You don't know where they are. John, good evening. Thank you for joining us.
Bruce, I'd like to go back to the Hinckley part of the conversation for
sure.
1 minute. You know, there's a feeling afoot, and I'm afraid that I fall victim to it, or at least I'm a subscriber of it, that there really are two economic policies under Reagan, one for the rich and one for the rest. And, you know, I guess that really hit close to home and really outraged me in the course of the Hinckley trial, because I think that there are probably a lot of very troubled young men behind bars who have done something as hideous as what Hinckley did, if not, God forbid, more so. And yet, it seems to me that the you know, there really is an immutable factor here that surfaces whenever I ponder the Hinckley trial, and that is a mom and dad who could pour $1 million into a defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to hear what your panelists have to say about that, and have to say about the fact that it's not too hard to conclude, at least for me, that justice was bought.
No doubt about it. I think that that's the case. I think I come back to the thing where when one shoots a president, one shoots a leader like Martin Luther King, one shoots somebody who is a catalytic figure in the national governance, I think then one does change the future of the country. And I think then mandatory death would be warranted and accepted and should be as a result of it.
Except that we have never accepted any sort of distinction like that constitutionally in terms of different classes. And I think that human life is fairly equal despite one station. And I think that the question that this caller raises is whether, as a matter of fact, the perception is that one can buy justice. I would suggest that while I think the Hinckley family bought very good defense counsel, that I don't think the jury was bought.
All right, we've got to move on. We've got just a few moments left. Before we went on the air today, we were talking a little bit about some of the things we're going to talk about this evening, and that was Prime Minister Begin's stormy reception on Capitol Hill, and Sheldon Gardner, as always, as telling it like it is, in your opinion, you said you thought Senator Chuck Percy was a dumbbell. Why?
Well, I think that Percy's got himself in a situation where he has no backing from the conservatives in his party. He had always a very close relationship with the Jewish community, and he's really gone out of his way to be as pro-Arafat as anyone can be. And I think his attitude in being totally biased in the situation is really destroying him from any constituency he might have.
Cliff Kelly. I don't think he's biased. I commend Senator Percy on his stand. When you have a organizations such as the United Nations, there are 157 member nations. When Begin came in to talk, 94 of them got up and walked out. Obviously, people we have been made, unfortunately, partners in the genocide of a people, and it's a very unfortunate thing, and I think Percy's totally correct. I think all of the arms violations that have been broken by the Israeli invasion of Lebanon and all
Cliff,
the other things.
Cliff, I don't want to rediscuss what we did last week.
Right.
Looking at it politically, within the state of Illinois, as Shelley was, where is he going to get his constituency from?
He can have Phil Klitschnik campaign for him.
Will
who's
it do
saying,
any good?
Who's saying the same thing. He's saying that the PLO should be represented, you have to deal with them, and I think that that's a very... it's an obvious thing.
Where's Percy's constituency?
It's nowhere, and I think Shelley's 100% right. I think Begin is a George Washington of his country. I happen to feel that way. I think that Begin is a gigantic figure historically. I don't mean to support everything Begin does. I think Begin has done our work for us. I think Begin has kept the peace, and I think, generally speaking, Chuck Percy is way down at the bottom of the ladder in terms of losing because I don't think the people support him. Whether they're Jews, whether they're conservatives, I don't think, or Republicans or non-Jews as I am, I think Chuck is a loser on that thing, and I don't think it can be justified.
Who's going to replace him?
Well, I think that if Chuck keeps it up, I think that Henry Hyde will go out against him in the primary and logically knock him off if it keeps up. I think Chuck has shown unutterable stupidity in the political understanding.
You're saying that he should have done like Rostenkowski admitted he did. In other words, Rostenkowski said that he was really for the sale of the AWACS to the Saudis, but... he voted against it because he feared the Israeli lobby.
No, I think that...
have a man with integrity, and I think that's what Percy is showing, I think that that can be put forth to the public. There are many people, as a number of those senators mentioned the other day, that certainly feel that Israel has gone way beyond the scope of reason in this situation, and they're losing a lot of support nationally.
Dick Clancy, you nodded your head when Henry Hyde's name was brought up. You have waged campaign against Henry Hyde...
I think Henry Hyde is a very bright man. Do not think of him as a statesman. I think that Chuck Percy has been counted out on previous occasions, and I would suggest that he probably will reappear as the Republican nominee in the future.
But one of the reasons why he has always been able to withstand, opposition in the past, which has generally come from the right wing, was that he has always had solid liberal Jewish support with heavy Jewish funding. What Shelley is suggesting is that the cornerstone of his past victories is crumbling.
That may or may not be true, and perhaps he will be replaced by an enlightened Democrat. But I do not think he will be replaced by someone from the right wing like Henry Hyde.
All right, Robert. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to get back to the Hinckley affair, if I might.
Go ahead.
The reason I called. It's a personal thing, and I'm sorry I can't say my real name because I don't want to get my family involved. In my family, we've had a tragedy, and it involves something quite like the Hinckley case. One of my relatives killed a person. They found him insane, and they put him in a prison. And not a prison, in an insane asylum. And he killed another two people. And it just, it upsets me when people talk about, well, when they talk about we're being barbaric by trying to keep these people out of society, and excuse me for being emotional. It just, I think maybe society would be better if we took these people out. And I think the Chinese had the right solution on that. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Thank you very much. It was difficult for you to say that, but we appreciate your personal insight into that. Good evening. You're on the air. Our last caller of the night. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hello.
Hello. How are you? You're our last caller.
Yes. I just wanted to comment about the death penalty for killing the presidential candidate.
Go ahead.
And according to the Magna Carta, people are not to be treated differently just because of their position in the government. And I think that's a very dangerous precedent for the government to value one life over another.
Yeah, let me add that my feeling about the death penalty covers everybody. It just doesn't cover, I think, if you are a murderer and there are no mitigating circumstances, it's certainly, for many, many reasons, and I've debated this subject many times, the death penalty is certainly proper.
Except for Nathan Leopold, we have never seen in my lifetime a rehabilitation. And one of the dilemmas we have, now I'm against the death penalty, but one of the dilemmas we have is that our concept of rehabilitation and stuff is really subject to a lot of challenge. And I venture you can't add another guy outside of Nathan Leopold, mm-hmm. who was a redeemed person who would otherwise been killed.
I'm for the death penalty, and I think the state has the right to defend itself against people who arbitrarily change our form of government.
And the responsibility.
Yeah, right, Cliff.
Okay, we are out of time. Before we go, quick, around the table, real quickly, this is the Ray Donovan lottery. How many more days has he got in office? Cliff Kelly?
29.
42.
9.
I hope no more.
No more. Well, okay. Could happen tomorrow. I'll give Ray Donovan another 2 weeks. I think 2 weeks from tonight we'll be talking about the demise of Ray Donovan, which has been hanging on for a long, long time. It's been hanging on since the day he was appointed. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. Our thanks to Dee Clancy, Tom Roser, Cliff Kelly, Sheldon Gardner, all good friends of us here at Inside Politics. We thank you very much for joining us on this, our second anniversary broadcast. We will be back next Thursday night at 7 o'clock. Our special guest, the Honorable Harold Washington, U.S. Congressman, will be talking about his possible run for the mayoralty of the city of Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thank you very much for tuning in tonight and for the last 2 years, and we'll see you next Thursday night at 7 o'clock. So long, everybody.
Portion of our show brought to you by the Fearmonger's Shop in the Dales. I want to say just a word about them. Most parents, before they turn in for the night, like to make sure that their families are safe and well protected, and I know a lot of them check to see that the doors are locked and bolted.